In the first chapter, in a moment we'll be looking at verses 26 and 27. You know, one of the exciting innovations of our day is technology called virtual reality. Now, you know, I'm really delving into a field that I am familiar with when I start talking about computer technologies and all, but virtual reality is a software, I guess we could call it, that places you in an environment or in circumstances that you're really not in, but it gives you the sense and the feeling of being in that environment. I came across some time back an article about a company that was called Virtual Jerusalem. And they were developing this software that would recreate the city of Jerusalem as best they could from biblical days. And so you could kind of take this visual tour through the city as though you were actually walking through, you know, a city street, and there were people there passing you by and people in the markets. And it was just like being right in the city. You know, the more I think about it, the more I think that there may be many people who have what I'm going to call a virtual religion. It seems to be the real thing. They think it's the real thing. They feel like it's the real thing. But it's not the real thing. James is a masterful teacher, and in this letter that he writes that bears his name, he discusses so many very practical aspects of life lived as a Christian. And in verses 26 and 27, he has something to say about religion and about the genuineness of religion, whether it is the actual religion that the Lord approves of. He says, if anyone, in verse 26, thinks himself to be religious and yet does not bridle his tongue but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is worthless. This is pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father, to visit orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself unstained by the world. Here in verse 26, we see where James talks about a virtual religion, that which is, it is not the real thing, but it seems to be real. And then in verse 27, he draws the contrast by talking about that which is pure and undefiled religion. He's talking about that which is genuine, that which is real. And so I'd like in our study this morning, for the few moments that we'll direct our attention to this text, to talk about this contrast and to investigate whether or not ours is a genuine, true religion, or do we have a virtual religion, that which seems real? It maybe makes us feel as though we are genuinely a religious person. I want to ask you the question this morning. Do you have a virtual religion or a real religion? Well, James, in discussing this, sets out by talking, first of all, about the mistakes of a virtual religion. He identifies three mistakes of those who have such a deceptive religion. And the first thing that he talks about is the mistake that we think it's real, but it really is unreal. He says if anyone thinks he is religious, if anyone thinks himself to be religious, I believe some versions render that if a man seems religious or seems to be religious. The point is that he's not in fact what he thinks he is or what he seems to be. You know, you're probably familiar with this computer technology, the virtual reality that probably most people are familiar with, that type of software, or the flight simulators that can put you seemingly into the cockpit of an airplane. And you have the sensation of taking off. I remember I got something akin to that when one time we were visiting at Disneyland and went to one of these, maybe it was Disney World, I don't remember which one it was. But we went to one of these rides that simulated the sense of space flight. And you go in and you sit down, you take your seat, and they've got the belts that you strap on, like you see, you know, the astronauts putting up over your shoulder and all of that. And you get seated, and I mean, this is really real because they've got a little bag there for you in case you get sick. And they tell you, keep your eyes focused on the screen in front of you. And when the ride begins, you have this image in front of you, and you can kind of see the nose of the craft that you're piloting just out your front window, you know. And pretty soon you're running down this runway, and you're taking off and zooming up into the air, and you've got the sense of being pushed back in the seat. And then you're on up into the sky and on up into space, and you're flying around, and you get this sense of objects going past you, and there are other spacecraft out there with you. And it all seems extremely real. And then you have the sense of coming down and the landing, and you're pressed forward as you're braking and your craft comes to the stop. All of it has the very real sense of having been in the cockpit of this aircraft. Well, let me ask you something. Now that you know I've been through that experience, would you like to go out and let me fly your plane on your next trip? Well, of course you wouldn't. But I've been through that experience, and it seemed so real, and it had all of the senses of being real. I've been experienced then. Well, of course I haven't been. But you see how we can have experiences that seem very real to us, but really, in fact, they're not. Well, religion, what James is talking about is the fact that religion can be that way. We may think that our religion is genuine and real and appropriate. In fact, he says, it's not. James is describing the person who supposes he's religious, who supposes, in this context, he's using that term in the sense of being in a favored relationship with God, that he has God's approval. Well, I've done all of the things that indicate that I've got God's approval. I mean, I come to church services like this. I sit in the pew and I listen to a preacher and I sing songs. And I contribute money when a plate is passed by. I go through all of those things that demonstrate that I am religious and that I have had a religious experience. God must be approving of me because I've been through that. I mean, I feel like He does. Well, that's the very point that James is making, that we can think ourselves to be religious. The mistake that we make in a virtual religion is to think that which is unreal is real. But there's a second mistake, and that is that it is an unrestrained religion. I want you to notice that he says in verse 26 that this man that he has described, who seems to be religious or who thinks himself religious, yet does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart. Here's a man who would not bridle his tongue. James is, as I said earlier, a very practical teacher. And in the course of his instruction, he almost always speaks about matters that deal with just very day-to-day life experiences. You want to judge whether or not your religion is real, whether it's genuine? Well, it ought to be having some kind of practical effect or impact upon your conduct. If you're not living right, then your religion is not right. And what James is saying is that a genuine religion, that which is not virtual but that which is real, ought to affect us in very basic ways, even down to the point of how we talk, how we speak. Do you have control over what you say? I mean, I heard some time ago about a wife who really just had a wonderful sense of humor, and her husband had kind of a reputation of being a fella who was, you know, quick to speak, and I mean, he'd let you know. He's one of these who thinks everybody has a right to his opinion. You know, he's going to let you know whatever he thinks about something. Well, to kind of jokingly make a point, one day she made a little bridle, like you would put on a horse. She made a little one that would just fit a tongue to make a point. A bridle, of course, was that instrument by which a person could exert control over an animal so much larger, so much stronger than the person. But yet, through that instrument of governance, a large horse could be controlled. Well, what James is just saying is we need to control our tongues. You know, James has a lot to say in this book about the tongue. Even in this chapter, this very same chapter in verse 19, he talked about how we ought to be swift to hear and slow to speak and slow to anger. Later on in the book, he talks about the tongue and the destructive power that resides in the tongue and how with cruel words we can inflict very deep and lasting wounds upon people. Oh, we can talk about the gossiping tongue, the lying tongue, the slanderous tongue. There are so many destructive ways that we can employ that member of our body. And what James is saying is that a mistake in virtual religion is that we live in an unrestrained way. And he makes his point by describing how we can be unrestrained in the things that we say. And the man who does not bridle his tongue but deceives his heart, he deceives himself into thinking that he is right with God while not even governing his own words. James says such a person is practicing a religion that's virtual and not real. You and I can attend church, we can sing, we can be baptized, we can give money, but if our conduct is not affected by our religion, then it's time to change our religion. But there's a third mistake that he talks about that's made by those with a virtual religion. Because a virtual religion is really unreliable. You look at the end of verse 26. He says that this man's religion is worthless, or some versions use the word vain. Both words simply mean that this religion is devoid of any purpose or result. In other words, it does not accomplish the purpose that God has for religious activities and beliefs. You see, virtual religion won't put one in a favorable standing with God. Even though we may think it does, it won't gain God's favor. Let me give you a few verses about that. Look, if you would, in the Old Testament, in the book of Ezekiel, in the 33rd chapter of Ezekiel. And begin reading with me in verse 30. He says, but as for you, son of man, it's God speaking to Ezekiel, the prophet. As for you, son of man, your fellow citizens who talk about you by the walls and in the doorways of the houses, speak to one another, each to his brother, saying, come now and hear what the message is which comes from the Lord. Let's stop there for just a minute. Now, God's telling Ezekiel, now here's what people are saying about you. Now, they weren't speaking unkindly about the preacher. I think I've told you, you know, sometimes how preachers can be talked about. One of my favorite stories is about the little boy riding in the back seat of the car with the preacher. They were on their way to the parents' house for lunch after services, and the preacher looked over the little boy. He said, tell me, he says, you know what we're going to have for lunch today? He says, yeah, we're going to have buzzard. He said, we're going to have buzzard? He said, yeah. He said, are you sure? The little boy said, yeah. He says, I heard Mommy say this morning we might as well have the old buzzard for lunch. Well, now preachers can sometimes be talked about like in that way. That's true. But that's not what these people were saying. They were speaking favorably about Ezekiel. They were saying, well, let's go and hear what the word of the Lord is. Let's go and listen to, Ezekiel, he can preach it. Let's go hear what he's got to say. But then read on. You might think, well, these got to be religious people. You may think, I love to go down and hear David preach. I must be a religious person. Or I like to go hear so-and-so preach. Listen to what he says further about these people who love to hear Ezekiel preach. He says in verse 31, they come to you as people come and sit before you as my people and hear your words, but they do not do them, for they do the lustful desires expressed by their mouth, and their heart goes after their gain. Behold, you are to them like a sensual song by one who has a beautiful voice and plays well on an instrument. Somebody can really sing beautifully. Sings, what he said here is a sensual song. Some versions say a lustful song. Oh, I want to hear one of those songs, they say. He says, but they hear your words, but they do not practice them. So when it comes to pass, as surely it will, then they will know that a prophet has been in their midst. What was going to come to pass was their punishment, their destruction. Surely it will, God says. And then they'll know that there's been a prophet in their midst because that's what Ezekiel's been preaching to them about. Well now, the point of all of this is, here were these people who willingly went out to hear him. Thought it was wonderful to listen to him and loved the way he preached and so forth. But were they a people with a genuine religion or a virtual religion? Well, it was a virtual religion. It may have seemed right and seemed good, and they may have felt better after they had heard him preach. But the fact was that the Lord says, they won't do what you say. And that's what genuine religion comes down to. Do you remember Jesus quoting from the prophet Isaiah? In Isaiah 29 and verse 13, he talked about people who came before him and they honored him with their lips. But he says, their heart's far from me. Jesus, in quoting that passage from Isaiah, called the people of his day similar kinds of people who honored with the words of their mouth, but their hearts were far from him. In vain, he says, do you worship me? In vain. You know, sometimes I'm afraid people get the idea that worship and religious activity is good in and of itself. And because it's religious, God's got to accept it and God's got to be pleased with it. Jesus talked about vain worship. He's talking about virtual religion. Well, I said to you that James draws a wonderful contrast in all of this, and so he does. And in verse 27 of our text, he begins to identify the marks of that actual religion, that which is genuine and that which is real. He talks about pure religion and undefiled. The first thing that he says about it is that it involves conversion. Notice, if you will, in verse 27, this is pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father. You want to know where religion that is genuine is practiced? Ultimately, it's practiced in the sight of God, our Father. Oh, now, our good works, our religious activities, certainly will be seen by other people. You remember Jesus spoke of this in Sermon on the Mount. When he talked about, in the 5th chapter of Matthew, he talked about letting your light shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father. Now, as we go about the practicing of our religion, as we go about the practicing of the religion of Jesus Christ, people are going to see it. They should see it, and it ought to have good effects. But we do not practice our religion to be seen by men. There's a difference in being seen and doing something to be seen. It's in the 6th chapter of that same book of Matthew, in the very same sermon that Jesus preached when he talked about those people who prayed in order to be seen by men, who gave alms in order to be seen by men. You remember what he said? He said, they have received their full reward. Only thing they're going to get is they've been seen by men. Do you see that Jesus is talking about virtual religion there and how some people were doing things, they practiced things that made them feel good? It seemed to be right. It felt right. But what they were in fact doing was practicing a virtual religion. What they were doing in order to be seen by people. Over in the book of Matthew, in the 7th chapter, Jesus spoke about a similar principle. In verses 21 through 23, listen to what he says. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Doesn't that sound a lot like Ezekiel that we read? God said they love to hear you. They love to hear what you say. But they're not going to do what you say. And it's the doing of what you say that's important, that makes one's religion genuine. Well, Jesus says, not everybody who says to me, Lord, Lord, is going to enter the kingdom of heaven. But it's the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Continue on. He says, many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and in your name cast out demons and in your name perform many miracles? May I ask you this? Does this sound like religious people to you? Are they involved in religious works? Did they make them feel good? Did they have the sense of being in a favored relationship with God? Well, of course they did. But listen to the conclusion in verse 23. Then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. Their practice had really been lawless. That is, it had been without the direction of God's law. I want to tell you, there's a lot of religious work, a lot of religious activity that goes on that is without God's law. It is without God's approval. And it may make us feel good, it may make us feel right, it may make us feel approved with God, but it's a virtual religion if it is lawless, if it is without God's law. No, a genuine religion involves conversion. That is, it involves a recognition that what I am doing is done before God, our Father. It must be done with the approval of God, our Father. It is in the sight of. May I ask you this? Is that the way you live your life? I mean, is that the way you come here and engage in what we engage in together here? Is it with the sense that what is being done is in the sight of God, our Father? Is that the way you live day to day? As in the sight of God, our Father? Our religion cannot be genuine if it is not rooted in the sense that what I am doing for the pleasure of God, my Father. What I am doing because it is what God, my Father, has instructed me to do. Or what I am not doing because God, my Father, said, don't do it. That's what being converted really means. It means to turn. It is to turn toward. There's an old Muslim proverb that goes like this. It says, if you hear that a mountain has moved, believe it. If you hear that a man has changed, do not believe it. You get the sense? A man can't change. How different from Jesus, who said in Matthew the 18th chapter and the 3rd verse, except you become converted, or the New American Standard says, unless you turn. The idea is of being converted. Unless you become turn and be converted and become like little children, you shall not enter the kingdom of heaven. Oh, Jesus says a man can not only change, He says a man must change. That's what real and genuine religion is rooted in. It's in the desire to change, to be converted toward God. But it also, James says, involves compassion. In verse 27, once again, he says this is done, that pure, undefiled religion is performed in the sight of God our Father. And it involves, he says, the visiting of orphans and widows in their distress. The second mark of genuine religion is to have compassion. You know, we might think, well, James, what is this genuine religion? What does it involve? We must be able to see deep mysteries. It must be to do great miracles. Well, surely, James, there's some spectacular evidence involved in demonstrating one's been converted. He says, let me tell you, what it involves is doing things like looking to the interest of those who are without husbands or those who are without mother and father. The word visit here doesn't mean just pop in for an enjoyable little visit. Have a little tea and crumpets with one another. It's a word that carries with it the idea of inspecting for the purpose of meeting needs. He's describing the compassionate care that one who can provide what is needed is willing to look into the needs and then provide them. And would you please take notice of the fact that he is talking about a man's religion. He's talking about what individual Christians can do and should do for one another. The third thing that he talks about is that the mark of actual religion is that it also involves consecration. He says it at the end of verse 27, that this pure and undefiled religion that is practiced in the sight of God seeks to visit orphans and widows in their distress, and it keeps oneself unspotted or the practitioner of this religion keeps oneself unstained or unspotted from the world. What he's talking about when he says to keep oneself unstained, he literally is saying to keep keeping, to keep on keeping oneself unspotted from the world. It's a continuous action. It's a day-to-day life. Now, you know, the Bible talks to us to some degree about some of the things that God keeps. The Apostle Paul in 1 Timothy 1 and verse 12 spoke about his assuredness that God was able to keep that which I have committed unto him. But the Bible also talks about things that we keep. We're to keep ourselves in the love of God, we're told in the book of Jude. And here we find that James is talking about keeping ourselves unspotted. We keep ourselves away from worldly things. Let me illustrate it to you in this way. I get drunk every Saturday night that I want to. I just don't want to. I keep myself from that. I don't want to do it. Now, I'll tell you, I do want to do some things that I ought not want to do. And sometimes I do them. My point is simply this. We do what we want to do. It goes back again to that passage in Ezekiel. They're not going to do what you tell them to do, Ezekiel. Why? They don't want to do it. We spend an awful lot of time. I think I've told you this before. We spend an awful lot of time trying to get people to do things they don't want to do. What we've got to do is to convince people to want to do the things that God says. And people who have a genuine and a real religion, not a virtual one, but that which is genuine, are people who have developed the desire to want to do. And so they have developed a desire to want to be unstained and unspotted by the things of worldliness. May I ask you, is your religion genuine? Is it real? Or is it virtual? What marks does your religion bear? Conversion? Compassion, and consecration. If not, then today's the day to begin striving towards such a religion and practicing such a religion. Jesus makes it possible to have such a religion before Jesus or before God as Father. He's made it possible by coming and making it possible for you and for me to be converted, to turn to God. And He's told us how to do that. It's done by faith in Him. Faith that Jesus is able to save us and bring about the forgiveness of our sins. If you believe Jesus is God's Son and would turn away from your sins, begin with that determination to be unspotted, unstained by this world any longer. If you would confess the faith that you have that Jesus is God's Son and be baptized, washing the guilt of those sins away. He says your religion that is genuine and real will begin and will bring you eventually to a home in heaven with God. We pray that it's your desire to have that. And if we could help you give your obedience to God today, then we stand ready to do so while we stand and sing.